But what is school but a means to prepare you to enter the real world? And if most real-world jobs neither require straight A's, or in fact straight A's might preclude the expression of some talent set that you might have, then I think the whole system needs to be revisited on those grounds alone. And so then I asked, well, where are all the straight A students? Well, they're in academia. That's where they all are. That's where the valedictorians go. And just look them up. You'll see. They go back to academia and become faculty. And that's fine, too. That's a successful career. But most people in the world are not university faculty. Most people are other things. So there ought to be some way in school for me to get the attention of my teacher in ways other than showing that I got an A. My favorite on that list are CEOs. There's some percentage of CEOs in the Fortune 500 that actually didn't finish high school. And the multimillionaires, because they had some clever sense, some people sense, but they had some, those are for those that rose up in a pre-existing company, and others had some clever idea. And one of my greatest moments of joy and frustration, emotions held simultaneously, was knowing that on my SATs, taken as a senior, took them twice, junior and as a senior, I remember taking them first, they said, oh, you're not expected to finish the test, just work, you know, work your hardest, but don't rush. So I worked hard and didn't rush, and I got a particular score, and I saw other people have much higher scores than I did. I said, well, how is that possible? Unless they rushed. So I said, there's something bogus here, so I'm going to rush. I'm going to, like, sort of rev my head and then go in with, you know, get the clutch, you know, get the engine running, pop the clutch, and hit it full, all bore. I did that. I raised the math score 100 and something points, and higher than what you're supposed to be able to do just by studying. And so the whole thing was bogus. Anyway, so my verbal score was sort of average. Nothing anybody would have written home about. Nobody would have said, hey, look, hey. That would have never happened. So what happens over the years? I write a column in a magazine. That becomes a book. That book is now translated in 10 languages. And then I wrote 7 other books since then. Wrote another column. And in the middle of all that, I get a letter from ETS. Just to show you what sway they still have over you. It's like, you know, what does... Are they going to nullify my SAT score? That was ETS, Princeton, New Jersey. You know, it's the headquarters of the purveyors of this exam.
The NSA of education.
Yes, the NSA. So I said, and it was addressed to Dr. Tyson, so it must not have been some old record that they were tapping. But I didn't know what it was. So I opened the letter and it said, Dear Dr. Tyson, we recently read one of your essays that appeared in Natural History Magazine, and we were impressed with its content and its writing style, and we want to excerpt it for our upcoming verbal exam in the new SAT we're writing. Will you give us permission to do it? So I don't know whether to kiss the letter or burn it, because what does it mean if I get an average, mediocre verbal score? And they're coming back to me to want to use my writing. What is that? I don't know what that means. I don't know. I'm angry just thinking about it. This is a fundamental flaw in the system. I mean, the hair stands up on my back. Because you are put in judgment by others based on your score. Not based on the fact that I liked to write at the time and I enjoyed playing with words, because words are kind of fun. I liked words the way you kind of like, sometimes you like sort of math brain teaser things. Just little curiosities in the language. You know, just, you know, are there any cool sentences out there? Like, you know, there's that artificial intelligence sentence, which has a problem for computers. It's 2 sentences. Fruit flies like a banana. Time flies like an arrow. And so you hand those 2 sentences to a computer, and ask it to understand them. And they are formally identical in their structure. Yet one is sort of completely metaphorical, and the other is literal. So, you know, is there a kind of fly called a time fly, right? And is an arrow a word for a kind of food? You know, food has all kinds of names, so you have to check the database of world foods and the animal database of kinds of flies. And is there a kind of fly that likes, a time arrow the way fruit flies like a banana? So I just like thinking stuff like that. And so call it ambition, or call it enchantment. But it was the source of my energy to continue to create, to continue to write. And, of course, I've always had a love for the universe, and that's been since I was 9 years old, first visiting the Hayden Planetarium. So that's been there. You get a lot of that in astronomy, because you can be an amateur astronomer and have a telescope. And, you know, you can't be a 9-year-old physicist, but you can be a 9-year-old astronomer. So that level of ambition started early, and it was deep. And growing up in New York City, where there is no night sky, it's not a part of what you are. My first night sky was the Hayden Planetarium when I was 9 years old. Stars came out. I thought it was a hoax. It's a hoax. Not that many stars. I know how many stars are. It's not that. And I occasionally lay awake at nights wondering whether, had I grown up on a farm and seen the night sky and all of its majesty from birth, whether I would have had this sort of cosmic epiphany that I did. Because I hadn't seen the night sky until I was 9 years old. So it's certainly not something I could have ever or would have ever taken for granted. Whereas if it's always up there from age zero, you go out on the porch at night and there it is, of course it's there because that's what it looks like from central Pennsylvania, the assault on who and what I was would not have been there. It wouldn't have had the singularity of impact that going to the Hayden Planetarium and seeing the sky for the first time did. So I wonder whether I'd still be an astrophysicist today if I'd grown up in a rural community. But, so because my interests ran deep, that gave me the drive to never stop.